the Buckmaster Show for Monday, the 14th of February, 2011, St. Valentine's Day, and of course, Arizona Statehood Day, as the Grand Canyon State celebrates its 99th anniversary today. Hope you had a great weekend. I am Bill Buckmaster, your host for the Buckmaster Show on KJLL AM 1330 and always on the World Wide Web at buckmastershow.com. We're live weekday mornings from 9 to 10. The program re-airs 7 to 8 in the evening here on KJLL. The lineup for today's show includes the political face-off with our commentators Bruce Ash and Paul Eckerstrom. Then we'll have a conversation with former Tucson Mayor George Miller. He'll be along. Plus, we'll talk about downtown Tucson restoration with Gail Hartman. Buckmaster Show is primarily an interview-driven talk show, but if you have a question for our guests, it's always welcome. You can call us on the Buckmaster Show live line 529-3508. Every other Monday on the Buckmaster Show, it's the bi-weekly political face-off featuring one of our two teams of commentators. Gee, we could have a tag team match here one of these weeks. This week, it's Bruce Ash, the Republican National Committeeman for Arizona, and Paul Eckerstrom, the former chair of the Democratic Party in Pima County. He's also, is the first vice chair now?
Second
vice chair of the Democratic Party.
That means two people got to die for him to become chairman.
That's right.
There's a double buffer zone.
I made sure of that.
Gentlemen, for the first time in 17 years, Arizona will have an open seat for the U.S. Senate. Well, the names, the folks are lining up. Bruce Ash, Congressman Jeff Flake is reportedly going to be announcing today. He's not wasting any time.
Did he already announce it? At 8 a.m. this morning up in Phoenix.
Why so early? Jump in right away, try to...
Oh, I think it's absolutely critical that you do that. This is going to be a very expensive election, and there are a lot of people who are going to be involved. Jeff Flake has been the Republican personality from the very beginning that everybody anticipated if John Kyle were to retire or to move on to some other position might end up succeeding him. So,
kind of the heir apparent as far as the Republicans are concerned.
Yeah, and you know, certainly John Shattuck would have fit into that category. He sort of, I think, self-selected out and reaffirmed that the other day.
Yeah. On the Democratic side, it's going to be tough. What kind of a bench do you have?
Well, there's a lot of names floating around. Obviously, Gabby Giffords was looking at that seat for a long time. Now, her recovery has been miraculous, and she's even being briefed now in her hospital by staff about things like Egypt. That just came off the wire today.
And she was informed, I understand, about Senator Kyle deciding he wasn't going to be running. She's walking the halls at the rehabilitation center, so it is really a miraculous recovery. But would she be ready
to do
a grueling kind of Senate campaign?
No, I think that's going to be asking an awful lot. But, you know, my mom had a great idea, and she just threw it out there. You know, I'd really like to see her husband, Mark Kelly, run for that seat.
One problem, he's not an Arizona resident.
Well, he can move here. He can move here, just like John McCain did, you know, when he ran for Congress. And the other thing that's interesting is, you know, there's a lot of names. Terry Goddard's name has been floated. I'm not sure he's up for another race that quickly.
Mr. Peterson.
Jim Peterson. But, you know, there's Phil Gordon, the outgoing mayor of Phoenix, who is a real possibility as well. So there's a lot of – and, you know – remember this, Janet Napolitano always, as a childhood dream, wanted to be a senator. And she could come back, and I know Democrats might forgive her for leaving us in the lurch with the legislature.
That can be a tough one.
That's a tough sell, even with the Democrats, Paul.
Yeah, but, you know, if the Democrats have her and think they can win with her, they'll get behind her.
Well, she casts a large shadow, Paul, so there's plenty to get in back of. I think that Janet Napolitano in this state has a certain amount of toxicity associated with her, not just the way she left when she had the opportunity, but the legacy that she left behind her of billions of dollars of red ink. And I don't think there's any time soon, you know, given her performance as Homeland Security Secretary, that she's going to be able to muster the kind of enthusiasm that she once had here in the state of Arizona. I think her days are done here in Arizona.
Well, you know, it'll be interesting to see, because people kind of look back on like the Clinton years as the salad years, and a lot of people I think look back on the time she was governor here as the salad years here in Arizona. And if that's the case, and you know, you can run a poll to see, obviously if she's not viable, she won't run.
If you lost your job or if you run a business, I doubt if you're going to have very many fond memories of Janet Napolitano. I would say that while the Democrat bench is thin at this time, there are some possibilities. Phil Gordon probably would be the leading contender. He hasn't lost an election. Goddard has, Peterson has, and make them somewhat suspect. Another possibility might be Kristen Sinema, who has
the state
probably
lawmaker Kristen Sinema.
Yeah, probably the largest shadow that you know anybody in the Democrat Party currently casts in the Arizona State Legislature.
Yeah.
So,
I would say Kirsten probably is looking at the new congressional district that might pop up in Phoenix. She's a little bit too liberal statewide to win, I believe. Phil Gordon, though, is a centrist. He ran the city of Phoenix very well. I think a lot of people might get behind him because I think he could win statewide.
Will the Tea Party's Bruce Ash get behind Congressman Flake? How's his relationship with Tea Party people?
That's too early to say. I think that there's been a fair amount of chatter online regarding Jeff Flake voting for the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, his initial support of the DREAM Act. They like him on fiscal issues, and certainly that is the primary focus of the Tea Party movement. But it's hard to say whether or not he'll have a great appeal with them.
Go ahead.
Yeah, Jeff Flake may have his biggest hurdle. I think he would be a very good general election candidate because he's conservative, but he's kind of a rational conservative, as us Democrats view him. He may have his problems from the right in a primary. That may be his biggest hurdle to become the next senator.
Okay, lots of speculation in that area. One thing that isn't speculation, Bruce Ash, is the new federal budget. $3.7 trillion spending plan that President Obama delivered today.
Took a forklift to deliver the budget to the Congress.
Many U-Hauls.
My youngest son worked at the White House.
Bill.
My youngest son worked at the White House in 2006 and 7. And he actually was the individual who was responsible for preparing. He worked at OMB, and it was his job to prepare the brief that went to the president and the members of the cabinet. And I remember him working so hard putting that together, and I remember how upset I was with him that the budget that year was $3.1 trillion. I said, Mike, you and all your buddies over there couldn't have reduce the budget to $2.9999999 trillion so that we wouldn't have gone over that level. Well, this year it's $3.7 trillion. They expect to have a deficit of $1.65 trillion. And I think that this budget proposal is dead before the forklift pallet hits the ground at the House of Representatives.
Well, let me do a little correction here. One, every budget is dead on arrival when it comes to Congress from a president. It always takes compromise to pass a budget, and that's what I suspect is going to happen here. And they'll find middle ground eventually. The second thing is,
well, they haven't found middle ground on the last budget. Well, they're still operating under continuing resolution.
Bruce. The other thing is, in real dollars, taking into account inflation and the increase in our population, this budget is the lowest amount of spending since the Eisenhower administration.
Well, you said 1950. That'd be the Truman administration.
No, actually, 1950, we have the lowest tax rate
ever
in terms of taxing people in this country since 1950.
So you're saying it's a very sensible spending plan.
Yeah, and frankly, it's got a combination of investing in something things that are proper for our economy in the future, and high-speed internet and education.
That's all I want is the government involved in the internet. Talk about something that runs pretty well on its own. You know,
it's infrastructure.
I'm from the government and I'm here to help you. I don't need any help from the government. I turn on my internet every morning and it works just fine without Barack Obama hitting the kill switch.
Under your world, that means we would get rid of the entire electrical grid and we'll take away all the infrastructure.
No, we're not talking about that. We're talking about the internet.
Will we take away the interstate system then? Because that's Eisenhower built the interstate system with federal dollars. Right, well, and that was good for business, Bruce.
Let's get
So here, there needs to be investments in our economy. That's obvious. But at the same time, we do need to get our spending under control and our deficit under control.
They're not under control.
This budget fulfills a promise that Obama made, which is by the end of his first term that he would cut the deficit in half. And that's what this budget does.
17 minutes now past the hour. This is the Political Face-Off. Bruce Ash is with us and Paul Ackerstrom. And Bruce is shaking his head here.
I guarantee you, Bill, anybody who just listened to the last 3 minutes is shaking their head saying, did this guy smoke dope before he came into
the studio?
You know, Bruce, instead of calling me names, maybe read the facts.
Paul, we're having some fun here, okay? It's, you know, that's all it is. Look, the deal is that anybody who's listening to this knows that this budget and this deficit is crazy out of control. And to have another $1.65 trillion deficit is going to be an anathema to the economy. We just cannot afford anything like this, and we need to have a sensible sort of a solution.
This would be a good time to segue into the state spending plan. Hoping to preserve the low level of state spending, Arizona lawmakers are pushing to legally limit future spending increases. Paul, can they take this? We've got a caller here. Joe is on the line. Before we talk about state spending, see what Joe has to say. Go ahead, Joe.
Hey, Bruce. I just really wanted to chime in. You know, in terms of the internet, I don't really fall in love with calling my cell phone company and trying to get past all the computer-generated voice applications that you have to do. Second of all, I think the GOP is really funny when they can only propose $100 billion in cuts.
You're right.
These guys are supposedly the budget masters. You know, it's just a joke. You guys are not bringing anything to the table. And I don't appreciate that smoke and dope comment.
Because, oh, come on,
you know what?
Joe. We're you know, I know, funny. Paul, we're good friends. We're having a good time here. It's radio, man. Don't take it so seriously.
Well, laugh at cancer, too.
All right. Well, to answer Joe's question, there's a considerable amount of debate within the Republican Party and through the Tea Party movement that the Republican pledge is not being upheld. The pledge clearly said that they would cut $100 billion, not from this budget, but from the 2008 budget, short of the security concerns and the entitlement concerns that, you know, are kind of an institutional part of the budget. And they really have not performed on that. And I think that the same way that Tea Party members across the country were so concerned about the last budget and legislation that was passed and so on, they're going to turn on their Republicans as well if they don't deliver on their promises. And this is serious stuff that everybody needs to pay attention to.
So Joe's got a good point.
I totally agree with Joe. For anybody who's called the DMV or try to get something done at City Hall, it is no easier to get through all of the answer machines and the prompts and everything else. Mm-hmm. And I get just as frustrated with my cell phone company as probably anybody does. That's why I always walk in and take care of it in person. But the fact of the matter is that we saw this in Egypt last week, where the government does control the internet, and President Mubarak did try to control the internet kill switch. And he really couldn't, because this whole business with the internet and cell phones and everything else is far bigger than any one government can possibly handle.
Let me chime in here. I'm going to add something that the Republicans haven't been willing to do, or Barack Obama hasn't been willing to do on the budget, and that is really scale back national defense spending. And frankly, as I agree with Ron Paul on this, we're spending $2 billion a week in Afghanistan. That money could come home here and help deal with the deficit. We don't need to be in Afghanistan. We don't need to be in Iraq. We need to bring the troops home and start spending that money on reducing our deficit here. And I'll go with the Tea Party folks and Ron Paul on this one, because I think that's what needs to happen.
The counterbalance to that, Paul, is that at this time, there's a major arms spending race that's going on in Asia, with China leading the pack, China developing weapons of mass destruction, weapons that will put them perhaps on a par with the United States. But that really isn't the major thing. You now have India, South Korea, Australia, Japan, Singapore, Indonesia, all with major spending programs of their own.
We don't need to be the policemen of the world. I still say we should have technological advantage in defense, but we don't need to be the policemen of the world and spend all that money over there.
That was Paul Akerstrom, and Bruce Ash is with us. It's 22 minutes past the hour. This is the Buckmaster Show. And when we come back with Bruce and Paul, we'll talk about lawmakers mulling over limits on future spending here in the state of Arizona. This is the Buckmaster Show.
The Arizona Inn is the only Tucson hotel named by Travel and Leisure magazine as one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. Located in Midtown, close to the University of Arizona, the Arizona Inn is located at 2200 East Elm Street and on the web at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn maintains AAA Four Diamond status for both the hotel and dining room, with Chef Allison serving up breakfast, lunch, and dinner daily, with a featured menu and seasonal favorites. And because the Arizona Inn is listed on the National Register of Historic Places, founded by Arizona's first Congresswoman, Isabella Greenway, the Arizona Inn provides an historic backdrop for your next special event. Arizona Inn is the perfect setting for weddings, anniversary celebrations, or your next business meeting, and you can make your reservations online at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn, luxury and elegance in the heart of Tucson.
Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero More, Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza, topped with the finest, freshest quality ingredients. Enjoy casual yet upscale dining while sampling our extensive boutique wine list. Vero More in Tucson at North Swan and Camp Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at veromorepizza.com. And coming soon, Noble Hops, Tucson's first gastro pub.
About 25 minutes past the hour, this is the Buckmaster Show. We have Bruce Ash and Paul Akerstrom with us for our bi-weekly political face-off. The state Senate is poised to consider four measures designed to preclude the state budget from bouncing back to 2007 levels once the economy improves. Two of those measures would become part of the Arizona Constitution if voters approve. Your opinion on that, Paul Akerstrom?
I think it's foolhardy. Capping spending at levels in 2006, when the state is growing, and who knows what will happen in the future, that we need to, frankly, right now, that means we're going to have the worst schools in the country forever. And I'm not willing to do that. We need to get back to revenue levels back in 1990, when we had our schools about average in the country. If we don't do that investment, we might as well pack it in as an economy in this state.
Well, I think most any spending program that has been initiated in the last 10 years ought to be up for discussion. And I don't know whether I agree or disagree with the measure that's in front of the legislature. Luckily, I don't make that decision. But I think that every state ought to be looking at all of the programs that have been initiated over the last 10 years. They should all be fair game for review and for potential sunset or elimination.
And, you know, Bill, we have some initiatives that passed during the 90s. I'm not a big fan of initiatives government by initiative, but that kind of structurally sets in certain spending on certain things. And now, for example, we've had tax cut after tax cut for 20 years, and we have it takes now, because of an initiative, a two-thirds vote in both houses just to raise a tax. And it just, at some point, we need to look at this state and say, we need to spend a little bit more to have a good economy. And if we do that, you know, overall, we won't be overly taxed. We're one of the lowest taxed states in the country. Why we have to keep going down this path, I don't understand. And certainly, I don't think we should build in even more inflexibility in the legislature for future needs and economic contingencies.
Paul loves to talk about how we don't pay very many taxes here in the state of Arizona and how the tax rates have gone down for the last 20 years. For you folks that are listening, look at your state property tax bill. Look at the bill that came in from the county.
The current one, you're saying.
Yeah, sure. And for you businessmen, look at your personal property taxes and look at the taxes that you pay on your corporations. Nobody can say that we're paying lower taxes today and that the tax structure isn't collecting the revenue. This is a revenue issue in terms of the economy is not doing well at this time. To put more tax burden on the taxpayers as well as businesses and so on would just absolutely be foolhardy. We have to cut elsewhere, and we have to change how we fundamentally run the state of Arizona and get out of some of the things that we've got ourselves into, such as Medicaid and some of the other areas that we just totally miscalculated what the impact would be. And we need to get proper reimbursement from the federal government for the impact of illegal immigration here in this state.
Let me tell you two things about the budget. One, I don't disagree with Bruce. We need to radically, fundamentally change the way we raise revenues, and I think we can do that with tax reform, where we can be friendly to business and still gain revenues by broadening the base of those revenues, getting rid of a bunch of deductions out there. The second thing is we need to start looking at what we spend on. Instead of spending tons of money on mandatory sentencing statutes that put people in prison for $36,000 a year that are nonviolent, we should be putting money into drug rehab programs and education, and we could cut the crime rate in half and save a ton of money that way. But this legislature won't even touch that issue.
I think they're likely to look at reforms in the state prison, and we're probably more likely to begin looking at drug rehab and so on as a secondary part of that. That would certainly make a lot of sense.
Yeah, it does make a sense. But Ron Gould, who's the chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee, a conservative Republican, will not even consider it. In terms of looking at the mandatory sentencing statutes, he said it's dead on arrival in his committee. He'll kill it in his committee. It has to go through his committee.
Well, when you look at the penal reform that's occurred in Texas recently, and it's actually been initiated under three different Republican governors and a Republican legislature, I think our time is due to come here shortly.
I hope you're right, Bruce, and maybe you can have a little influence with some of those folks in the legislature.
I don't seem to have had much to this point in time, but thank you.
Why don't we end it right there? This is the Political Face-Off. Bruce Ash and Paul Eckerstrom have been talking about, all sorts of things, and not really much agreement there, but who would expect as much? It's about 30 minutes past the hour, coming up on CNN News. We'll talk with former Tucson Mayor George Miller in a few moments. This is The Buckmaster Show.
Political views collide.
This is exactly what I'm talking about.
Tucson's Jolt. Tucson's Jolt. KJLL, South Tucson.
CNN Radio, I'm Bill Caiaccio. President Obama's new budget that was sent to Capitol Hill today would reduce deficits by over $1 trillion in the next 10 years.
We do this in part by eliminating waste and cutting whatever spending we can do without. As a start, I've called for a freeze on annual domestic spending over the next 5 years.
Republicans say the budget doesn't cut enough. The president's budget supports a plan that would pay you $7,500 for buying an electric car. There's a large anti-government protest in Iran today. Witnesses say some of the demonstrators in Tehran were attacked by security forces. Today is Valentine's Day, and it's also the day you can start filing tax returns if you itemize deductions. The process was pushed back by the IRS because Congress delayed finalizing the tax code. The most trusted name in news, this is CNN Radio.
Hi, Mrs. Miller. I have the cookies ordered.
Oh, wonderful.
Okay, you have 5 boxes of Snacker Bubbles, 3 Little Yummers, and your total is $0.
You mean they're free?
Yep, they're free.
Well, it's a pleasure doing business with you.
Free is better. Do your simple federal return for free at TurboTax.com. It's free to prepare, free to print, and free to e-file. No wonder TurboTax is the most trusted brand of tax software in America. Visit TurboTax.com today. Trusted brand claim based on Intuit Commission Survey, August 2010.
Hey, Kelly. So, who'd you hire to do your emails?
What? You know it's just me here.
Come on, I got your newsletter. Pretty fancy, photos, coupons. Come on, who is it?
Oh, no one, silly. I use Constant Contact.
Really?
With ConstantContact.com, it's so easy. They make me look like $1 million, and the emails really work.
Oh, yeah?
It got you in here today, didn't it?
Touché.
ConstantContact.com. Plans as low as $15 a month with a free 60-day trial.
Listed on the National Register of Historic Places and founded by Isabella Greenway, Arizona's first congresswoman, the Arizona Inn is still the standard bearer for luxury hospitality in Midtown Tucson, just minutes from the University of Arizona. Founded in 1930, the Arizona Inn continues to win top honors for hospitality and dining. Travel and Leisure magazine names the Arizona Inn one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. And the Arizona Inn is proud of its AAA four diamond status for both the hotel and dining room. Whether it's for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, or a private event, you can count on Chef Allison's featured seasonal culinary creations to please. The Arizona Inn, a special oasis of hospitality in Midtown Tucson, 2200 East Elm, and on the web at arizonainn.com.
Sarnoff Artist Materials is Tucson's award-winning destination for everything art-related, including fine and graphic artist supplies, framing, stationery, and the world's best writing instruments. Visit owner-operator artist Henry Sarnoff at 2504 North Campbell, 3 blocks north of Grant, and always at the easy-to-navigate website sarnoffart.com. Because it takes an artist to know an artist's needs.
For more than 40 years, Pima Community College has helped our citizens realize their dreams, prepare for meaningful employment, improve their quality of life, and create a better community. We haven't done it alone. Your continuing investment in and support of education has made it possible for us to prepare hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans for jobs. Today's Pima Community College students will be tomorrow's firefighters, nurses, police officers, teachers, and small business owners, the backbone of a literate, prosperous, thriving Tucson and Pima County. During these extraordinarily tough times, our funding is in serious jeopardy. And as budgets get even tighter, we'll have to cut back services just when people need us the most. So please support us in our ongoing effort to build a better tomorrow. Help us provide the education and resources that the people of Pima County need today. For more information, contact us at 206-4500 or visit us on the web at pima.edu. Pima Community College, developing our community through learning.
Let Karimi Oriental Rugs keep your valuable area rugs looking like new with Tucson's finest cleaning, repair, and restoration services. Karimi specializes in restoring antique, silk, and Navajo rugs with 100% satisfaction guarantee. Karimi Oriental Rugs appraises and purchases quality rugs and offers a vast selection of hand-woven rugs from around the world. Be sure to stop by Karimi Oriental Rugs at Fort Lowland Dodge or on the web at KarimiOrientalRugs.com.
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery, and I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tinka Verde, at the southwest corner of Tinka Verde and Sabino Canyon, and online at MedicineManGallery.com. With 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Mell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tankaverde, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery, on the corner of Tankaverde and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
It is 24 minutes toward the hour on the Buckmaster Show on KJLL AM 1330 and always on our website, buckmastershow.com. As we enter the 2011 political season and the election of the mayor of Tucson and three city council members, one can't but hope that we will not have a rerun of the mean-spirited campaigning of the 2010 congressional elections. So writes former Tucson Mayor George Miller in a recent op-ed piece in the Arizona Daily Star. George Miller served more than two decades on the Tucson City Council, being first elected to the council in 1977, becoming mayor in 1991, and leading the city for 8 years. A lifelong Democrat, Mayor Miller is a World War II Marine veteran who was wounded in the South Pacific on the island of Saipan in 1944. Mayor Miller is 88 years old, and he looks terrific. It's good to see you, Mayor Miller.
Good to see you, Bill.
Why did you write that op-ed piece about urging folks to take the high road and focus on the issues?
Well, I think everybody in this community, is maybe even in the country, but certainly in Tucson, as a result of the January 8th shooting that occurred, have this feeling that there's something very wrong in the political system, and that it's bad enough with all the money that's poured into it, but this talk about each other in such vicious terms. Now, it's one thing to disagree with an individual who you're running against. It's another thing to talk about the things that are important to you. That what you will do when you get in office, and to me that's what's important. Now I know very well that a lot of cynics will say, "Well,
yeah, they're going to say, hey, that's just part of politics,
right?" And
they're all negative anyway.
Yeah, and negativism wins, and so on. And all I can say is my own personal experience. I can't speak for anybody else, but I had three very difficult primaries.
Were they nasty?
They were not nasty, and the point is, and I had four general elections that were difficult, and at no time did I talk about the person I was running against.
Really?
I always talked about what I was going to do, and I'm not trying to put myself up on a pedestal of being perfect or anything, but I never thought that it was important to talk about them. I wanted to talk about what I believed in and what I was intended to do if I was elected to office. So you can't pass a law saying you can't be nasty any more than you can pass a law and say that you can't hate somebody. But you can take... And this is what I would hope, that the people running for office in the city election this coming year will take a pledge to say, we will talk about the issues that are really important to this community, and what I, meaning the candidate, will do about them if elected, and not about the person they're running against. And that's basically the answer to your question.
So you'd kind of like to see them all take a pledge and say, let's just talk about the issues.
Absolutely.
And not this candidate.
Yeah, we don't have to run down the other candidates. It seems to me that the incumbents have a record, and they should stand by their record, and then the people who are running against the incumbents, assuming that that occurs, then they run and say, look, this is what I would do if I was in office, and that's it. And that in itself, you might say, is an attack on the incumbents, but at least you're not talking about them personally. You're talking about issues.
Mayor Miller, we have a caller, so if you'll slip your headset on there, we can listen to what I believe it's Joe has to say. Oh, this is Velvet on the line. Velvet, go ahead.
Yes, I'm listening to the program, and I agree wholeheartedly with Mayor Miller. I spoke to someone who was running for office last year and told him the same exact thing that Mayor Miller is saying today. Well, I want to know what you are going to do, not what the other guy didn't do. And I think that's most important for anybody running for office. And I thank you.
Thank you very much, Velvet. And you're preaching to the choir here to Mayor Miller. Mm-hmm. I think that he's got a big smile on his face. I think that's what you're looking for.
That's exactly it. Yeah. That's exactly it. You can't pass legislation to make anybody do anything. This has to be a personal thing. That, in other words, is part of restoring the integrity to the whole electoral process, where we talk about issues, not people, and running down people and demonizing them and accusing them of being traitors and whatever else. Talk about what's... Look, we have problems in the city, the state, and the federal government. Those problems need to be addressed, not the other stuff that's discussed in elections.
Well, what issues should the candidates be talking about in this upcoming mayoral race and the three city council races?
Well, first of all, obviously they have a problem in terms of the budget. There's just
big
no
time.
Question. Big time. And they have to discuss what they think should be continued as part of the city budget financial situation, and what they think they could eliminate that would make sense and still not hurt people. That's a very difficult thing to do, but that's what they have. That should be their approach. The whole question of Rio Nuevo, where is it going? Originally, there were 19 issues on the ballot in the year 2000. Two of them have been accomplished, and the rest of them have not been. Somebody needs to address just those issues that the people of this community voted for and should be able to see the results of it. Certainly, transportation is always a problem in this community.
Do you like the light rail plan that's coming out?
Well, the light rail plan has been so committed, I don't see how you can go any other way but to go ahead with it. They've gotten money from the federal government.
Do you like it, though?
Well, I think it's going to be a help in terms of being something special for particularly tourists. And also, it should be, if the university is able to, and the city together, moved parts of its areas downtown. In other words, not only school buildings, but also housing facilities, then that the light rail in and of itself is going to be a great thing.
In a moment here, Mayor Miller, after your interview with us, we'll be talking with Gail Hartman, and you know Gail very well. She's done a lot to kind of bring downtown, at least the reconstruction of the Presidio. So where did we go wrong on downtown? For 20 years, when you were on the council and part of the city as mayor, you talked about, you and your colleagues, getting downtown restarted. People have been talking about the resurgence
forever
of downtown since stores started moving out to Elkhorn.
Right. Well, forever. And the thing is, in order to make the downtown work, you need people living either right close to it or actually downtown. So that's why the University of Arizona putting in classes downtown as well as the facilities for living, that brings people downtown. And I think that that's the key to this whole thing. And the Rio Nuevo money was to help bring people downtown by paying for infrastructure for businesses in the immediate downtown area. And that money has not been used for that. And that's the whole story that people who are running for office this time ought to look into very carefully and come to some kind of a conclusion. Because the way it looks now, it's almost possible for the state government of Arizona to say no more tax increment.
Quick question for you about annexation. It was talked about for years in your time on the council. Do we have any idea if that's ever going to happen again?
Well, annexation is annexation of vacant land is the easiest thing in the world. Annexation of where people live is not so easy. And obviously, I'm talking about east of Campbell, or certainly east of First Avenue, and north of River Road. And there you have people, and according to the state law, if you want to annex an area, a majority of the homeowners have to say yes. And so it is a very difficult thing to do. And the city of Tucson is still talking in those terms. But I believe that the annexation north of River Road is directly related to voting for council members by ward. And ward only, so that the people north of River Road have more than voiced this opinion. I know this for a fact, that they would consider coming into the city if they had their council person. And so that means that this change that was made by the state legislature, instead of by the people of Tucson, unfortunately, but anyways, it was made. If that holds up in court, then I think there's a better chance to annex north of River Road.
Have you been active with Veterans Group? We thank you for your service as a Marine and the 2nd Marine Division. Do you get together with other veterans?
Not other than the Veterans Hospital, and that's about it.
Okay. George Miller, it's always a pleasure to see you. You're looking terrific at 88 years old, and we thank you for your views. Come back and share some more thoughts with us sometime.
I certainly will, Bill.
On the new Buckmaster Show.
You just have to call, and I'll be here.
All right. Thank you very much. Gail Hartman is coming up next on the Buckmaster Show.
I used to rule the world, sees it rise when I gave the word. Now in the morning I sleep alone.
Let Karimi Oriental Rugs keep your valuable area rugs looking like new with Tucson's finest cleaning, repair, and restoration services. Karimi specializes in restoring antique, silk, and Navajo rugs with 100% satisfaction guarantee. Karimi Oriental Rugs appraises and purchases quality rugs and offers a vast selection of hand-woven rugs from around the world. Be sure to stop by Karimi Oriental Rugs at Fort Lowell and Dodge or on the web at KarimiOrientalRugs.com.
Sarnoff Artist Materials is your one-stop store for fine and graphic artist supplies, framing, stationery, and Mont Blanc and other top-of-the-line writing instruments. Order online at sarnoffart.com or visit owner-operator Henry Sarnoff and his store staffed by artists, for artists, and those who seek the finest quality in everything art-related. Sarnoff Artist Materials, 2504 North Campbell, 3 blocks north of Grant, and always at sarnoffart.com.
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery, and I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tinker Verde, at the southwest corner of Tinker Verde and Sabino Canyon, and online at medicinemangallery.com. 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Mell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tanque Verde, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery on the corner of Tanque Verde and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
Vero Amore presents Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza using fresh homemade mozzarella and the finest quality toppings. Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero Amore, casual yet upscale dining with an extensive boutique wine list. Vero Amore in Tucson at North Swan and Cap Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at veroamorepizza.com. Coming soon, Noble Hops, Tucson's first gastro pub.
Are you up for the challenge? It's the 3rd Annual Boot Camp Challenge, March 19th. Join Olympic athletes, local armed forces, and celebrities as we laugh, climb, crawl, walk, run, and work out boot camp style through a 5K run-walk obstacle course. To sign up as an individual or a team, go to beatcancerbootcamp.com or call 546-1601 for the Cancer Boot Camp Challenge, 7:30 Saturday morning, March 19th at Brandy Fenton Park. For strength, for health, for life, for fun.
You It is 10 minutes before the hour on the Buckmaster Show. I am Bill Buckmaster on KJLL AM 1330, and we're always on the web at buckmastershow.com. Well, we were just talking with Mayor Miller, former mayor of Tucson, about downtown and what it takes to get a successful, revibrant downtown. Well, one of the few success stories in the Rio Nuevo revitalization project has been the reconstruction of the Tucson Presidio. Joining us now on the Buckmaster Show is Gail Hartman, past president of the Presidio Trust. Ms. Hartman and her colleagues were instrumental in getting the reconstruction of the Presidio built. Gail Hartman is also president of the Save the Scenic Santa Ritas, which is leading the charge to stop the proposed Rosemont Mine south of Tucson. Gail Hartman, good to see you.
Yes, thank you for having me.
We'll save the Rosemont for another time. I think there's more than enough time
for
that one, but there's lots to talk about with the reconstruction of the Presidio. Mm-hmm. Give us a little chronology of how that whole project came about.
Well, it was really a homegrown project in the sense that many people who have lived in Tucson a long time, particularly ones of Hispanic background, cared about Tucson's history, and they really wanted to see some of the Presidio reconstructed. There had been thoughts about it really since the 20s and 40s and 50s, but never money, cohesion, no, nothing to really, really make it happen until Rio Nuevo, of course, provided the funding. So there was a big push from a lot of folks in town. In fact, I always think of both the Presidio and what we called the Convento, the mission across the river. Those were really the heart of the Rio Nuevo project. People sort of have forgotten that now. But that's what drove it, and that's why people went to the polls, was to really vote for reconstruction of both of those facilities.
How much was actually left of the Presidio wall?
Well, the only place you can see the Presidio wall now is inside the county courthouse in the assessor-treasurer's office. And anytime during a workday, if you walk in there, there's a very nice exhibit at the back of the office that has the wall in its correct place. I mean, it was, of course, the bricks were taken apart, taken down, and then put back, and a very nice mural of what it looked like at the time if you were inside the Presidio looking across the river to the west. So there was no wall left standing. The last piece of outdoor wall was taken down in about 1918.
So your reconstruction efforts entailed what?
Well, the first part of it was really the archaeology, going out there and locating precisely where the wall was in the areas that we could do that. And, of course, the focus was on the corner of Church and Washington, the southwest corner of Church and Washington, because there was a parking lot there. There weren't buildings. So there was a lot of excavation done there, and indeed the wall was found, as well as much earlier pit houses, Hohokam and pre-Hohokam, you know, 2,000-year-old little Native American houses, because that area had been used by people for a long time. It's really why Tucson is where it is, because it was close to the river, close to water, you know, a good place to live.
Talking with Gail Hartman. She is the past president of the Presidio Trust. Gail, tell us a bit about what the Presidio Trust does. How can people get involved with it?
Well, thank you very much for that question, because we always need more folks. We're a volunteer nonprofit organization, and we do the programming at the Presidio. We created the original exhibits, and we maintain those, and we also provide everything that's in the gift shop. We do what we call living history on Saturdays. Our next one will be March 19th, and then the last one for this year will be April 2nd. And those, if you come down to the Presidio between 10 and 3 on those Saturdays, you will see people dressed as they were in colonial times. We have a cannon, which we shoot off, muskets.
I think kids love it. You dress up as well, don't you?
Oh, I do too. Yes, of course. I'm an Anglo-American Spaniard. And so we're a very mixed ethnic group. We have an African-American member. Of course, there were African-Americans here at the time, so he is quite legitimate in representing the Spanish colonial period.
We're coming up on St. Patrick's Day, of course, and there is that Irish connection with Lieutenant Colonel Hugo O'Connor, the Irishman in employ of the Spanish crown, who really selected the Presidio site, didn't he?
Yes, he did, along with Father Garces. Now, they came from Tubac, marched up the river from Tubac in 1775, and chose this site for the new Presidio. And they chose it, as I said a little bit before, because it was across the river from Tohono-O'odham villages, because there was always water in the river at that location, because there was good farmland, and it seemed to be, from their point of view, a good location, as people for thousands of years had already concluded.
March 19th is the next Bringing Our Heritage to Life event at Church in Washington is where folks should come. You're getting some out-of-town and international visitors who want to see our little taste of what Tucson was in the old days.
Oh, indeed we do. At this time of the year, we have lots of foreigners coming in. Of course, a lot of people from Canada who are coming here to get a little warmer. But yes, lots of Germans, French, people from all over the world. And they come downtown because they think something should be happening downtown.
And you're trying to make something happen.
And maybe we're one of the few things that is happening. But they do discover us because we have information at the visitor center. And they seem to be quite delighted with what they find.
So was Rio Nuevo money then used for this reconstruction?
Yes, indeed it was. It was, I think, the best deal the public ever got, because there was a lot of volunteer time put in and a lot of work that didn't cost anybody a cent. But yes, it was somewhere about $3 million for the archaeological research, the reconstruction of the Presidio wall, and the complete renovation of what we call the Hakame House, the little house that faces on Court Street, where we have the gift shop and museum.
Let's talk about the Presidio Trail. This is a historical walking tour of downtown Tucson. You've got a lovely brochure here that is put together, I guess, by your Tucson Presidio Trust.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we came up with the idea. Actually, my friend Marjorie Cunningham, who's a local attorney, she needs to get the credit for the idea. She went to the Democratic Convention, I believe it was, in Boston one year and walked on what they call the Freedom Trail, and came home with the idea that we ought to be able to do something. Somebody suggested she talk to me, and between the two of us, we kind of figured out how to put it together. And it's the city, bless their hearts, put the blue line on the sidewalk, and that's what really makes it work, because people can simply follow the line. There's little circles with numbers, tell you where you are, so you walk with the map in your hand, and you walk around the blue line. And it's just really a lot of fun. And we see people certainly during the 6-8 months of the winter season downtown all the time with this. It's been phenomenally successful. We've printed well over 100,000 of these brochures. And it's very little public expense, except for the city painting the line. Most of the money comes from businesses. We do get a little money from the city and county, but it's a gonga deal, as we would say around
It's very
here.
Thorough, too. I mean, you've got several dozen locations. A quick question that I didn't ask about the Presidio wall. Give us some idea how large or what was the circumference of that original wall?
Yeah, that's a good question, because what people see now is just this little corner that we've reconstructed. The whole Presidio was, I think, 11, 12 acres in size, the biggest in the Southwest. And it goes as far south as the county courthouse and then over to the city hall and then back on Main Street and up Washington. So it was quite large. And at its height, there were between, I think, 400 and 500 people there, soldiers, their families, children, and then I always say dogs, pigs, garbage, you know, who knows what else. It probably wouldn't have been a very appealing place to us, but it's a really good place to help people understand what Tucson was like a couple hundred years ago.
And the height of the wall?
It was about one story and then had two-story towers, and we've reconstructed one of the towers at the northeast corner.
Okay, that next event is March 19th, and give us a little bit about the hours for
10 to 3. The address is 133 West Washington, but you really just need to know corner of Church and Washington, and parking is free on the weekends on the streets, so please come visit us.
The Tucson Presidio Trust, do you have a website that you can direct people
we
to?
We do, and it's...
as I hand you the brochure.
Well, yeah. It's TucsonPresidioTrust.org, I think.
All right. Gail Hartman, thank you very much for being with us, and we'll look forward to that next event coming up on March the 19th. That's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show. BuckmasterShow.com. Hope you have a great day.
Listen to this.
You're tuned in to Tucson's best choice for local talk.
I love it, huh? Little back and forth, witty repartee.
KJLL, South Tucson.